are live here on Classic Black Dude. Obviously, we was laughing already before the show even started. Welcome back to another episode. I'm your host, Clark Jones, a.k.a. Pod Strickland. It's been a lot of things happening this week in Black News World Universe. Mostly, it's All-Star Weekend in Chicago, and we're in Chicago right now, and these motherfuckers is getting a taste of that Hulk. I wasn't even ready. I walked outside. I live in L.A., obviously, and I walked outside with a hoodie on, like, damn, I'm probably overdressed. And then I remember cars have to warm up before you drive them. So it's not like, oh, I could be there and it takes me 50 minutes. Then I'll leave when it's 50 minutes to go. No, throw that extra 15 on now because that car got to warm up. Somebody tried to actually say it's bad to warm your car up one time. And I'm like, take away every blog, please. Just kill every BuzzFeed article. Die a slow and merciless death. Every BuzzFeed author, by law, must be stopped and frisked by Mike Bloomberg himself. He can't send no goons. All 5 1-inches of him, and I'm talking about sideways, just frisk the fuck out of you.
Is he a frisk? He's hippie.
Frisk all of the desire to go viral out of you. And just shove you down the Bedford stop of the L train. Why did I get all in your face?
Very aggressive to start.
Podcaster.
Started off. That's very Pod Strickland.
Very Pod Strickland. I go to the point. Yeah. What? We got my man, Felonious Monk.
A.K.A. Aaron Podriguez. I thought
Aaron
about that the
Podriguez.
Whole time.
Let's just keep going.
Son, the whole time you was talking, I got to have a name.
A.K.A. Pod Flanders.
Oh,
like,
that's really nice.
That's
really
what
nice.
I am. I keep going with the puns.
That's really good, man. Aaron Podgers. That's why. What do you think?
Oh, right? I must have got signed to Raucous Records because I keep that head pod rap with me. It's head podding. You know what I'm
got
saying?
Got your head podding because you know it's fat.
Because you know it's fat. It's all corny puns.
What?
It should be corny black dude, but we ain't going there.
Not even. It's classy. Classic. Classic isn't classy.
It's
classic
a class.
Tell them what's the difference between classic and class. What's the difference between systematic?
We had a long conversation about one of the biggest, I don't know who I hate. I don't know who I hate sometimes. I know I'm supposed
know
to hate
like.
Every conservative. But it's a lot of good black conservatives. And a lot of them I went to school with.
Is it a lot? Is it a lot?
If you break down mentality, I don't even know if black people are liberal.
No, black people are not liberal. Black people might be Democrats, but they're definitely not liberal.
We're not liberal.
Not as a group.
We're not a liberal group. No. And that's why
I'm very liberal.
I'll tell y'all why. First of all.
I'm pod-aggressive.
First and foremost, let me podify your answer before you go anywhere. Because my man, we started out in New York. We met here in Chicago. Black Hipster, Blipster Life.
Yeah,
he did with Dave Hellum. You've seen him do that. You've seen him
shot on my block.
No. You've seen him with his wife playing the role of dad and husband.
Role of husband and dad.
You've seen him on his new show.
Yeah. For Life. The ABC, Sony TV, 50 Cent. Produced For Life. It's a reenactment of Isaac Wright Jr.'s real life story. He was sentenced to life plus 70 years, the first person ever charged under New Jersey's kingpin law. He then became a paralegal in prison, took some cases of his fellow inmates, created case law while helping get them out. He got precedents set in their cases that helped get them out, and then used that case law and the precedents that he set to get his own case overturned. He actually got a police officer to get on the stand and flip on himself to admit that he had fabricated some evidence. So shout out to Isaac Wright Jr. Shout out to Sony Pictures and ABC and 50 Cent for putting the show together and for booking a brother, because that SAG insurance, bro.
You got
change
that. You got that. Thank you.
Life.
Speech
hey,
ready.
I got it ready. Yo, shout out. Shout out to everybody who.
No steno, no book paper.
Listen,
you ready?
I don't care if I
no
ever get an Emmy. Every podcast I ever
inside.
Go to, my award, my reward, and award was SAG-AFTRA insurance. Needed.
Yo, I want you.
I could go to the doctor now. Son.
I want to see you on the carpet, man, with that dashiki tux.
Oh, I'm absolutely going. I'm going. I'm
that
wearing
dashiki tux.
I'm absolutely.
That East African formal wear.
All on the red carpet.
Oh.
I'm bringing in Jada. I'm coming with a bottle of Tej. It's gonna be like when Kanye came with the Henny bottle. I'm gonna be out there with two bottles of Tej on the red carpet.
You know my brothers. My brothers.
In
of the cloth. They don't want you down. Compare none of Ethiopians fine.
Listen, I don't even drink. But
with Hennessy. The white
you.
Man's poison.
Fine wine and Hennessy. I'm playing
Hennessy
all Afro B. It's gonna be crazy.
Hennessy and LaCroix are made by the white man.
They might. I know
destroy,
LaCroix definitely is.
To destroy.
Taste buds everywhere.
To destroy black on black love.
Son, they used to make that Dax hair grease. And I remember being young and people
Dax.
Saying, you know that was made in South Africa by the apartheid rulers to make sure that black people's hair
that shit work,
seeps
though.
Through their brain and make sure that they get cancer of the brain. And that's what keeps the black man docile in America. And I was like, also, it keep my waves laid. So you got to make decisions.
Hey, man.
You know what I mean? You got to make
I know it would be a shock for me to be anti-apartheid,
for anyone who knows me.
And I don't defend none of that.
Yeah,
I saw Cry Freedom.
Right.
They made me watch it
because
I went to a woke-ass
and
high Denzel's school.
Pretty good. Denzel's pretty good.
And it's all, I don't defend it, but Dax worked. I don't give a fuck.
Son,
where
everything
it was
that
made.
Had a crown on it, they were like, yo, that's apartheid.
Oh, man.
Anything with a crown. Remember the little smell goods you used to put in the bag? It had the crown. That was apartheid. I was like, son, how are apartheid really doing all of this import-export business? This is crazy.
I mean, they was busy. You know why? And that's why, like if you watched old episodes of A Different World or if you saw School Days, like, divestment, I learned that from Spike Lee movies.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even know what that word meant, but the show, they always
that
talked about, we got to stop. On A Different World, it was like the Buzz Cola, but that was really Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
It was like, we got to get all of our money. Man, I mean.
Was it Heavy D on that episode? The divestment episode? I know
they
Shaka's
did at least three a season. So maybe he was on the one with Tupac. Where Tupac played Jada Pinkett's old lover.
I do think that show has been underappreciated for how progressive it was. Not at that time. If it was made right now, if we watched episodes right now, it's literally talking about the 1% back then.
You know,
in
what?
89, 90, 91, 92, they were talking about the 1% divesting from these companies. They were moving towards socialism in some of their conversations.
You know
they
what's funny?
They would have voted for Bernie.
What's wild
they
is
felt the, burn.
The early 90s sitcoms were very socially aware.
Yeah.
When you go back and look at them, and then there was a dip because Designer Women talked about Clarence Thomas, right? You had a dip. I know some of the listeners like, damn, he took it to the Design and Women,
right.
Huh?
That's a good
design
show.
And Women. It was a great show. They dealt with Clarence Thomas. A Different World was dealing with real life issues. Murphy Brown. All these shows
used
to talk about. Roseanne was a staple of that.
It was woke as fuck.
And then like something happened, and we like, we need TV to just be silly for a little while, and then maybe we'll come back to it.
I think people forget when you have Republicans in the White House, filmmakers get like super aggro and they're like, I've got to do something and use
Hollywood,
my art.
For sure.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
And then you get a Democrat in the White House. You have Bill Clinton for 8 years and all of a sudden it's like, well, everybody's happy. No, that motherfucker's still hungry. You could still make good TV.
That's a great point.
You could still make good TV. We didn't do it during Barack's eight.
If there was a Republican in the White House 92 through 96, I don't think Ellen gets canceled.
Absolutely.
It's like Ellen's like, yo,
absolutely,
we're trying to push it even further. And they're like, well, look, we already have a liberal Democrat in office.
You got that.
So now you
and
get
that's what
nothing
you get,
else.
And then you get don't ask, don't tell from that.
You know what is
right?
You get a
centrist Democrat who's
exactly.
like, I'm here, so you should be happy. And nah.
It's like when your birthday is 2 weeks before Christmas. It's like, okay, we gave you that. Now on
you
the 25th, you get nothing, or just don't open everything.
Which, by the way, which side note, which it's just, not. I didn't choose when y'all fucked. Like that's messed up to the kid.
This kid had no choice in when y'all fucked. This kind of feels like y'all set the whole thing up.
Right.
To be honest,
hey, you know what we should do.
How we kill two birds.
We should fuck in mid-March, and that way the baby.
Your math is quick.
I got a daughter that was born November 19th. She's a February 14th conception.
Oh,
I know.
So you just added the month.
I just added a month. You see, I'm nice with the math.
That's
son.
That Vanessa Huxtable math. That new math.
You see,
that's a deep cut.
Yeah, that was. I should cut one side of my head. We'll talk about that.
He didn't do no, the Cosby Show didn't do no social issues, did they?
No, because he didn't want anybody to start asking who was he dropping pills in their drinks for.
He didn't want nobody to ask, why did you choose for your character to be an OBGYN in the basement of your own house?
You nasty son of a
somebody. So ain't no receptionist.
And you got a wife or a lawyer get you.
Wait, it's a side door. They ain't even got to go through the house. They ain't got to see the pictures of the wife.
Why ain't no
pictures of the wife on your desk, bro? Why? These are questions for the number one America's dad.
America's dad is out.
But looking at America, of course America's dad would have these type of issues because America is a fucking disaster.
Yeah.
America's. Oh damn! I just got a text from the Illuminati. My bad. Hey, ease up, bro.
He just got a text.
We just got a text
from Bill Cosby in prison. Hey man.
He tweeting. Pull
your pants up, bro.
Pull your pants up. That's why you getting beat up by police. It's your fault, stupid.
It's on you. You know why the police are beating you up?
The police.
Why don't you drop something in the police's drink? And you ain't never
heard dueling Bill Cosby's.
First of all, you've heard dueling Bill Cosby's.
Third of all.
Wife Camille.
Now, my bail.
I don't even think I'm doing a Bill Cosby. I think I'm doing an Eddie Murphy doing a Bill Cosby, which is better.
My commissary is $@Bill.
I'm doing this Christmas. I'm going to do a store box where we got the ramen noodles two for one.
Now, to make a shank out of a toothbrush.
First, you need concrete with the rough edges. And now you got to take the rough edges and you got to be careful, man, because you got to just start shaking and you start shaking and you get it. And as soon as you get it sharp,
to make jello smoke bombs, you don't need jello.
Now, you need a gelatin type product. No. You make your toilet wine with jello.
People are tuning out of this episode
right now. Right.
5 minutes ago. And then check it back to see if we're still doing Bill Cosby.
I still got to go listen to one of the
God puns with Pod. Shout out to all of them. Pod Save America. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, man.
And blah, blah, blah. Now, we have so much jail talk because my man, and I don't use governments except when I'm texting them. He has been locked. How long were you locked up in the bank?
Six years.
Six consecutive?
Six.
Or total?
Bike to bike.
To the front? To the bike?
Yeah, 19, from age 19 to 25, I had to sit still.
You was on vacation.
Yeah, they don't let you, I'm going to take a day off. I used to, hey, man, I feel like I learned my lesson today. Can I be here today? I'll be back.
It is a back and forth process. You know, PPP,
yeah.
Prison parole, prison cycle.
Nah, I said, fuck that. I was like, y'all were right. Sometimes you like, hey, man, I don't think I need to learn no more. You know, some people are like, yo, I went to college, but I need to further my education. It was like, I feel like I need to get my master's. I need to get my doctorate. I was like, nah, 6 years. I feel like I got a master's in prison. I don't need a doctorate. That's just, I'm not going to pay that loan off. So fuck it. I'm going to go home.
Go one.
And I did catch another charge later.
See?
But I finagled the bagel. I beat that one. That's how I started doing comedy.
This was in New York?
This was in Virginia. This was in Virginia.
But like,
that's
the
why
gun
I left.
Laws are so laxed.
Yeah, but not for felons.
Nah.
I was already a felon. So I got pulled over for I was driving a friend's car and the tent was too dark. And I get pulled over, and this is January 2010. This is exactly 10 years ago. I got pulled over for the tent being too dark, but I panicked because allegedly there were things in the car. I don't know this, you know. That's the story we sticking to.
That's your defense.
That's my defense lawyer.
It's on record. So everybody listens to this podcast.
But what really happens is I get out of the car and I panic because I know I'm a felon. I actually at the time had two driving without a license charges already on my record with suspended time.
Why you think they pulled you over?
I was in a high drug traffic neighborhood.
I was in an area.
So the tent was the tent, but they were pulling me over because they probably like, I don't think this guy lives here. Why is he in this area? So they pulled me over. Instead of me sitting in the car waiting for him to come, which is what they, you know, with Train to Do. I get out of the car, but I come out with my hands up like, yo, why you stop me? But I'm causing a distraction intentionally.
So people can see?
So people will come around. I want witnesses. So okay. When everybody comes out, you know, he still arrests me or whatever. And then they search the car and they find a gun in the car. So from January of 2010 to February 2011.
It's not funny.
It's hilarious.
It's funny now.
It wasn't funny that
week. Like, because it's like, y'all want everybody to see how bad the police are, how they harass us,
There's
how
a
they
gun
pull us over for no reason.
I didn't know.
And whose gun is that?
They planted that. Y'all saw him, right? They was like, yo, no, I didn't see
I want
it.
Witnesses. I want testimonies. I want the community to rally around. And damn, I didn't think y'all was gonna find
it. A gun? What color is it?
Wait a minute, everybody,
that ain't my silver. That ain't
everybody
my...
go back in the house. Everybody go back.
Go back.
Y'all didn't see no faces, no face, no case.
So the crazy part is, at this time, I'm still like 1 foot in, 1 foot out. I'm probably potentially really headed back to prison. This is one of those like I'm making choices that aren't good choices anyway. So I get pulled over. They find a gun. You know, I bail out a couple hours later, whatever. And
you was doing well.
I was okay. I was financially okay. And I bail out, and all of 2010, just mentally, I'm a wreck because I know it's mandatory 5 years. There's no mandatory. You're going to jail for 5 years.
For a gun is five. Gun. I think it's what, three in New York.
It's three in New York. It's five. It's three in New York on your first charge. If you're a convicted felon, it's a mandatory five. So I have to do five. And I'm already in my late 30s at this point.
5 years is...
5 years.
You can feel that.
And I got a kid. My daughter is five going, or just turned six at that point. So I'm not going to see my daughter from 6 to 11. And then I got to explain to everybody that, I had to go back to prison. 20 years later, by the way. To, you know, almost 20 years.
The first time was what year?
It was 92. So 92. We're talking about 2010. I should be past this. I should be smarter than that, right?
Report card is supposed to be
right. I'm clean. Smarter than that. So at this point, I'm just wilding out. 2010, I did everything that I wanted to do. I spent way more money. That was, you know, I was like up and down the highway. I was buying bottles of Ace of Spades just to piss out. Like a lot of these lyrics I would hear, and I was like, yeah, I remember that. All this Ace of Spades I drank just to piss out.
Just to piss out.
I mean, I've been in the bathroom lit off of white Hennessy and Ace of Spades that I was just pouring the Ace in the toilet. I wasn't even drinking it.
Were you all up and down the Eastern Seaboard?
All up and down the Eastern Seaboard. I'm in D.C. There's pictures of me in front of the Washington Monument with money in my hands, just being reckless. And then the girl I was dating at the time, I remember her looking at me and saying, there's so many things that you could do. You might be one of the brightest people I've ever met, and you're giving up on yourself by taking this route. And people talk about drugs as the easy way out. It's not the easy way out. Selling drugs is hard. It's very difficult. I don't know why people think it's easy.
It's dangerous.
But it's also not the best use of your talents. If you're talented enough to make money doing that, you're talented enough to make it doing something else.
Absolutely.
And what ended up happening was a guy got arrested. They tried to get him to implicate a bunch of people that I knew. He refused. They ended up... deporting him. And
oh shit.
And I think that was like my wake up call. And I remember that happening, and I remember sitting in the house. I never did drugs. Like I didn't smoke weed, but I used to drink a lot of tequila. And I remember just doing one of those bottle of tequila over the side of the couch, laying there just drinking, not eating.
That Patron?
Drunk to the point of
yo, rappers
I'm not
had
even
us.
Paying attention
rappers
no
had us on Patron.
They
like
had
it
us
was
dumb.
Liquid gold.
They had us dumb. And then when I woke up from the drunken stupor, I just cleaned my house up. I remember just like doing a spring cleaning, but it was fall. I remember doing like a spring cleaning of my house, and for the first time in a while, I was just like, all right, what am I gonna do next? And a buddy of mine was like, yo, you should try stand up. I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Ain't no goofy nigga.
What the fuck is wrong with you? I said, I'm gonna be honest with you. If somebody laughs at me, I might shoot the front row up.
Yo, you trying to send me back.
And I went to see him do stand up, and I was like, you know what? That shit do look fun.
That's where they get you. That's where they get you. Yeah. You know why? And this is for anybody who wonders how that process starts. What you do is, sitting in that audience, this is most comedians, you make an internal contract with yourself that you can do better than that.
And let me just say this, you can't. You can eventually. But whatever you saw them do, the first time you go up, you're not likely to be better than that. But that's absolutely, you're right. My thought was,
I'm funnier than that. And then you know what? That's why this shit, although we love it too, and you know, it can be lucrative and all of that, the thing that keeps you going.
Eventually.
And we're going to get into that in the next segment too. We're going to talk about your money. But the thing that keeps you going not even the first year, but because if you ain't excited about it in that first year, you might as well just say, fuck it. This year two through like year seven
you told yourself
I can do better than that,
and you're still trying to you know you're gonna figure it out, because listen, when I went on stage that first day, what people don't know is you have no concept of time the first time you go on stage. So they say 5 minutes, you're up there 20. None. Most of the time, unless they hard light you,
bombing or killing.
But it doesn't matter. You're just going to keep going until you feel like you got a laugh, which is going to take a minute.
Yes.
So I get off stage, and the mistake I made was I brought 35 people. So they're not honest. They were like, oh my God, you were
amazing.
You
went up there.
They were so
great. Wait, you brought 35?
I bought 35 friends.
White women?
No.
Which?
I had paper.
Which
former? I still
which
paper.
Ex-con talks like that?
Yeah, I still
No, they were ex.
Oh no, I was gonna say. 2 months later, I beat my case.
That's funny.
And so I've always credited comedy.
Okay.
With that, those things lining up. If it wasn't for comedy, I wouldn't have slowed down. If I hadn't slowed down, I feel like I was given a second chance. And so yeah, second segment we could talk about how. You got rich off of.
Stop it. I have no money. I'm struggling.
Some podcasts are the most lucrative business right now. It's a $1 billion business.
For the white boys?
It's going to be
My name is not Shane Gillis.
The producer said no.
Excuse me. My first name is not Shane. Shane anything.
Pod Sterling over here said not at all.
Oh, man.
We're all trying to make it out here, boys.
We all trying to make it, baby. All
right. We'll be back on Potty by Jake. We got Felonious Monk. You're on Classic Black Dude. We'll be right back.
I'll do LaCroix. No Red Bull.
Put no Red Bull in there.
I think Clark might stab you. He's like, it's going to kill you, or I am.
Yeah. You're going to die, bro.
Nah, I don't. It's not
good. Please don't.
I know. Everyone listening out there, taurine is not bull piss, but it's still not good for you. Don't drink it.
I saw what a can of Diet Red Bull did to a chocolate donut, and I'm just like, fuck that, because I got chocolate donuts in my stomach already. And then if I put Red Bull, I saw what it did, and I'm just like, I'm super scared now.
You should be.
All the women out there, do not put baby powder on.
Yeah, you're going to get cancer in the.
All I have left. Passion fruit.
Here come the white band. Well, I'm trying to instruct my sisters. All I got is passion fruit LaCroix and
you know. Like a LaCroix?
No, I want to talk about this message to the black woman.
First of all, Clark, did you know that LaCroix was gluten-free?
How could it not be?
It's water, motherfucker.
It's at every interracial cookout. It's gotta be. Like my nigga, when'd you become lactose intolerance?
Did you know we were always lactose intolerant, my brother?
Ever since I met her.
You're not supposed to eat cow pus and blood. It's like, if you don't.
This is true.
You're not.
This is all true.
There's also a true statement.
Everything that people do like to try to scare folks and tonight, it works on me now.
You know what I realized, though?
Like, this is scientific. I used to be like, fuck it, we gonna die. Now I'm like, okay.
Nah.
But I can't drink water
this
no more.
This is my scientific hypothesis. When you're young, your system actually recovers so much faster, right? That the stuff that you're not supposed to eat, your body's like, all right, you're not supposed to eat it, but we're going to cure you so quickly that you don't even really know that you're off. And then you get older and the same shit you used to eat makes you feel sick. It's because your fucking immune system isn't strong like that anymore. So you drink some milk, which you used to be fine with.
Your body
and now all of a
change.
Sudden your body like, yo, man, come on, man. Cut this shit out, B. I don't have it like that no more.
What you think going to happen with this carbonara virus? What's the carbonara effect?
I think the carbonavirus. It depends. Are you using linguine? Is this a linguine virus?
I use just a spray.
You talking about the strong flu? Because that's just fucking strong flu. Listen, I'm gonna tell you how ageist I am. someone said, you know, it's only killing old people. And I was like, I mean, is enough? Like, how many do we need?
Because the body changes. Because
the body changes.
The body can't handle
young
it.
Kids is like, coronavirus, fuck out of here. I'll drink a six pack and go back to work
you
tomorrow.
You know what I'm saying? With the lime.
Old people are like, coronavirus.
Put some anything with virus in it is life threatening.
Put a lime on it.
It's serious.
I don't like listen to old people's advice about health conditions because the motherfuckers used to die from scurvy and that can be cured with orange juice.
That can be cured with orange juice. The sexual transmitted disease.
Drink enough orange juice.
Epidemic in retirement homes, and the orange juice like is stocked because ain't nobody drinking it. They fucking raw and not drinking their orange juice.
That's it.
And calling you when they should be texting.
That's right.
It's too much shit.
I got
happening.
The arthritis. I can't text you. My thumbs hurt.
Please, please. They don't understand automatic replies. They start talking to the automatic reply.
I wonder how much interference you get between a cell phone and a hearing aid. This is all awful. Not. This is all awful. Can we?
No, it needs to be discussed.
Is AARP gonna? They're gonna. They're not gonna march.
Well, march is relative, because my march and your march shuffle. Might be different. They might shuffle down, do your dance. I bet you.
Oh.
I want to do a social experiment. How many people age 38 to 52? If I could just Willy Wonka them with down, do
you almost
dance,
got me.
Do your
you
dance.
Almost got
right.
me.
You almost started marching.
So I was like,
If these headphones weren't connected, we would have lost Monk.
We almost lost him.
Bring him back. Somebody, play What We Do by Freeway. Stat.
Listen, if you had played just a little bit of Frankie Beverly and Maze, I'm
oh
gone.
My God, my
if I had heard whoa, whoa, I'm
that's
out.
It.
I'm out.
The first three notes. That's I don't it. Even need
you
Frankie.
Didn't even,
yet.
I didn't even dun, have to. Dun, dun, dun. Oh.
Right. Hey, it's either Beyonce or Frankie Beverly. I gotta go.
Either way,
I
either way
go.
I'm out.
I'm taking the LaCroix with me.
It's the wobble.
And I'm going.
It's the wobble. You're 51 years old right now and the wobble comes
man.
On. All of a sudden your knees don't hurt.
Cameo.
Ow.
With the pod piece. AKA cod piece.
Cod.
I love back and forth. Back
cod
and forth.
Black
was my jam.
Back and forth.
That's the greatest funk song of the 80s to me. Back and forth by Cameo. Because of the sound effects in the song.
I hated 80s.
I love it. Before
synthesized music.
That, I loved it.
Like, that's my least favorite Stevie.
You didn't like the New Jack Swing?
I liked New Jack. So late 80s, when Teddy Riley started.
He ran music.
Word up. Once that started happening. Word
wait, do that one more time?
Yeah. Word up.
Okay,
once
I didn't hear you say it one more time.
Word up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yabbity, yep.
It's Keep Teddy, that. Ready with the 1-2 checker, Rex in effect, then the synth like a then it's in some don't oh, remember shit. Words relaxing. Booties in the cuties, then the cuties start action, relaxing. That was written by Pharrell.
Yes.
I tried to mention Pharrell
early,
once
that's
every
early
episode.
Virginia Beach, Virginia 757 getting on. Shout out to the whole fucking area. My son went to school, that same school. My son went to first class. I mean
Virginia,
my brother. I'm sorry, my brother went to went to them schools out there, man.
Just
Princess
like,
Anne.
Like the festival, there's something in the water in Virginia.
Something in the water. Especially
that's
that area.
I survived my shooting.
Yeah.
That's where you shot people.
That's true. Both of those things. Fuck. Son, I remember when that happened, I reached out to you, and you were like, yo, I just saw a dude get shot. And I wanted to sympathize, but also I was like, yo, I used to shoot people.
You get it.
I'm not really the right person to say, hey, man, I know that shit's scary.
Here's what I didn't realize in the moment.
That's why I used to do it, you know.
And I talked about this when I posted it because our
those
it was
pictures
in
with you
the
and Amina are crazy.
Right after,
like just, yeah, that's
the
crazy.
Document. It's in the documentary "Ancient Mama's Heat Wave." That's it was just at Utah at the Sundance.
I was gonna say cons, and I know that's not right. That's why that's why I kept looking down. Like
that's how I know you cultured.
Thank you, brother.
What I didn't realize, at the time, and I realize now, was that because it's such a normal occurrence, that, and you know, in the moment you're like, damn, he could have shot at me.
Right.
But what I remembered is those types of guns aren't meant to clear out witnesses.
Nope.
I mean, to kill witnesses. It's meant to clear out space
it's
so nobody
noise.
Sees anything.
It's noise.
It's noise.
Right.
So you hit gunshot. I did what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
When that took off.
Let me
yep.
Let me go on.
Yeah, yep. Because he know a gun that loud, everybody knows to get down.
40 cal is what I use for that reason.
The
person I was trying to hit, he's going down.
You're
but,
shooting
but
at
everybody
somebody.
Else,
yeah.
You, this is loud enough for you to know, turn your head, go. You shouldn't be looking towards the sound.
Now, if you still here, then you just want to get
then
shot.
Then you next.
Because you can. Yeah. serve as a warning shot to the rest of the community. That's also a warning shot.
You know what I realized about that time is, and people will talk about how can you be so, how can you lack empathy? How can you be so careless with lives and what they don't start with? And this is, you know, part of my prison abolition plan. What they don't start with is these are people who don't care about themselves. The biggest growth that I've experienced is how much more I love me than I did at that time. I didn't care about me. I can't hurt you if I don't care, if I care about me, because I'm not willing to do time. If I shoot you, I'm going to jail. I'm not willing to do that to me. It's whatever, man. I shoot you, I kill your whole family.
As black men, this is such an important message. And maybe men larger. I mean, at large, whatever. But
we don't really know any white men except for the James.
Yeah, hey, and James. James got
it's just me, boys.
30 more seconds of talk time on Classic Black Dude before we cut his mic.
26.
And now it's 24. But what... I've done my worst things to other people.
It's not classic people of color.
When I felt it's not classic array. It's not classic allies. When I felt the worst about myself is when I've hurt others the most.
You're most harmful.
Because I'm just like, you know, shit, I ain't shit. So
and no one
people
else
have
is.
To get no one else is, or they're gonna have to get used to the fact that I ain't shit.
Right.
So whatever, this is what I am. I hurt people.
Hug your kids too. And I know and I say that not as an indictment on my parents, because they parented me the way that they knew to parent. But I do see, I do think that this thing that black people do in trying to prepare their kids for the harshness of the world is not give them any environment where they don't have to feel harsh. If it's tough for you in the house and the explanation and excuse is, well, I'm being hard on you because the world is going to be hard on you too.
Hard, yeah.
Well, where the fuck is somewhere where it's not hard on me? Where? Where's my one space where it's not hard on you? And so for men especially, black men especially, they go expecting their wives or their girlfriends to be that space. Well, then where's her space? Because her parents have been hard on her too, because the world's going to be hard on her. And we're not safe. We're not a soft space for her. You got to start establishing inside your house, man. Everybody in there's got to be nice. It's that Nikki Giovanni, James Baldwin conversation.
Right.
You lie to them at work. You put on this good soft face for them at work. And then you come home and you cuss me the fuck out.
I'm making the James Baldwin face from that clip.
He was all,
I don't even date women, but you make a good. Like, you know it's deep. When a gay man is like, damn, I got to treat women better.
Sister, you're right. Shit. I'm also a misogynist just because I like men. But that's a real thing. Like, my wife absolutely can't be this ride or die. My wife is she's my comforter. No.
Your girlfriend is not your therapist.
She's not
your wife
therapist.
Is not your therapist.
She's not the person to take my burdens. And look, sometimes I share shit with her so she knows where my headspace is, so she can understand that if I'm being quiet, it has nothing to do with her. Hey, this is what I'm dealing with. You know, I'm when I look at my son sometimes, and this is a real sentence that I've said to her. When I look at my son sometimes and how happy he is, it traumatizes me because I realize the difference between him at 3 and me at 3. Was that somebody tells him, I love you every day.
Multiple.
Somebody hugs
two
him.
Two people.
I've already hugged and kissed my son more times in 3.5 years than both of my parents combined ever hugged or said I love you in 47 years. I'm not saying, again, I want to be clear. I'm not saying my parents are bad people. I'm saying the way we were raised to parent doesn't provide a space for us to grow into our fullness. And you can look at, this isn't me being I'm a progressive parent. This is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This is shit that's been studied. Yeah. Maslow's hierarchy of needs says that you have to be secure. You have to eat. You have to know that you have food, water, shelter.
The first one is food, water, shelter.
Then you have to feel security.
Security, then sense of belonging,
I think
is
third. Right?
Then fourth, I forget, and fifth is like love.
All of these things, though, remember, all of these things are things that
or
can happen in your house.
Yes.
And if they're not happening in your house, so the sense of belonging doesn't exist for us because you're the kid. So there's a separation already. Parent, kid, you do what the fuck I tell you. I don't even have to explain it to you.
There's
a whole nother conversation, right?
And I don't want to veer too much from what you're saying, but that's why, like, people say, man, we need to put an end to gangs. Gangs will be around forever. They've been
gangs
around forever.
Gangs give you the sense of belonging that your family doesn't.
It's the third level. You need a sense of Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, the apostles, like gangs will always be around now. What the gangs are able to do and what they have access to and their intentions, that can change. But gangs and people needing to feel a part of something, organizations.
I don't want
to
be in a
fraternity.
Okay, but you're going to be in something. You're going to find a group.
You're going to be, because you need that.
You need it.
If you have food, shelter, water, and you have a family.
And you have security.
Or and you're not, you know, in Kosovo. This is from my age. I should say Kosovo. But if you're not overseas.
Jesus Christ,
and
man.
Even then.
George
Jesus
when
Christ,
the George
man.
H.W. Bush was
what
that, brother?
What in the Waco, Texas are you talking about?
What in the, read my lips, no new taxes are you talking about, buddy?
What in the, where's the beef?
What in the Oliver North are you talking about?
What?
Did you say where's the beef? What in the Wendy's?
What in the Max Headroom are you talking about, bro?
Max Headroom.
What in the Arsenio Hall show are you referring to, my guy?
What in the Straight Outta Compton are you saying, my guy?
What in the Give It Up for the Fly Girls are you saying?
What in the... My face together. Oh, my face hurts.
What in the Dan versus Mark or whatever Reebok 92 Olympics commercial?
What in the, what would you do if I sang out of tune?
Sir, what in the there's a rare condition are you talking about?
This day and age.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wait a minute. Where's the youngest daughter?
Sir, what in the, this is your cousin Pam, are you talking about?
Oh, what in the, Cockroach, is that your real name? Oh, boy. Shout
what
out to
in the Penny Spins bass line are you talking about, sir?
What in the Blossom are you saying? What in the Blossom and Six and Punky Brewster are the same show do you mean?
What in the emptiness is the best show on NBC? Are you talking about, man? It was a classic.
Oh, shit. What in the...
We could do this for the rest of the show. This is one of the silliest, realest episodes we have. Excuse me if you came here for one or the other. Yeah, but well, we make jokes and we talk about real shit that happened. I survived. Listen.
This is a recorded Monk and... Clark conversation
at the bar at the Laugh Factory.
At the bar at the Laugh Factory. That's all this is. Conversation. I'm glad y'all are here.
I know y'all are enjoying it though, because it's so damn enjoyable.
I want you to know that I do consider you a friend. Here's one of the reasons why I consider you a friend. My friends have to have the ability to do all of those things. We have to be able to somehow, without thinking, pivot from a conversation about Maslow's hierarchy of needs and parenting abilities and generational curses into let's do a 3-minute riff on
you know you're early in the 90s. You know you're
black kid from the 80s
you
and 90s.
Too
if you
much
watched
TV in the early 90s.
You know what must see TV is, what and you can name all of these theme songs.
What in the high C ecto slime cooler are y'all talking about?
What you mean, dark skin Aunt Viv?
What? What in the we're following the white Ford Bronco are you talking
what
about, sir?
What in the why he don't want me, Uncle Phil, do you mean?
And that's where we got to take a break. We'll be right back on Classic Black 2 Podcast right here in Chicago. We got Felonious Muck. I'm Clark Jones, a.k.a. Posh Strickland. And listen to me sell some stuff. Man, we back.
Super disappointed.
We back because they said some funny shit during
just
the break.
Great stuff in the break.
No, it wasn't even funny. It was insightful. Yeah. It was explaining. He was giving the oral history of the Will Smith crying scene. Yeah. To hell with him. Yeah. I don't need him. And I'm going to be a better father. Why come here, woman? What happened, Uncle Phil?
So Will
James
Smith,
Avery?
James Avery. James Avery, classically
Shredder.
Trained. Classic. Yeah, Shredder. James Avery, classically trained theater actor, really just like what they always did in those old shows was take a comedian or some big name celebrity and build a show around them. And so the person at the center of the show wasn't necessarily a good actor. So they would put these great actors around them, and James Avery was one of those. But the problem with that is this scene is so emotional that you have this novice actor trying to pull off these complex emotions.
This range.
Right. And Will Smith is a performer, so he doesn't know how not to turn to the audience. He doesn't know how not to perform this out.
Break that fourth wall.
And so James Avery, after a couple of takes where Will's clearly not getting it, he's like, look, man, next scene, ignore everybody else. Look directly at me. Make sure you make eye contact with me. Don't break your eye contact with me. Read every line to me. And so James Avery was like, I'm feeding him emotion. I'm giving him the sympathy that he needs. I'm hearing what you're saying to me, and my face and my eyes are reacting to what he's saying. And Will just starts going, and he's feeding it, and he's taking it. I'm going to be a better father than you ever were, and I'm going to do this one, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to be the woman. And it's so powerful. And then right then when he hugs him, which, by the way, not part of the scene. That's not how it's written.
That's just, I want you to
that's just something that happened. He hugs him, and he says he falls in my arms. He starts crying. He's sobbing on my shoulder. And I lean in, and I whisper in his ear, Now that's fucking acting.
I thought she was going to say he leaned in and he whispered in
it. It smells soft.
Where's the beef?
You smell good. Is that obsession?
And
obsession.
And James Avery is the reason why I became an actor in that moment.
And James Avery
no longer.
Looked him right in his face and he kicked him in the ding ding.
He gave me a hug, which wasn't in the scene.
It wasn't in the script.
And he leaned in my ear and he said, kick him in the ding ding. And that's when I knew that acting was more than just rapping at that moment. And then I did Bad Boys with Martin Lawrence. And what Martin told me was, like every time on scene, I'm trying to do my acting, and here come Martin with his antics, and I was just like, Jada, what's going on? And it was beautiful. Yeah.
That's ladies and gentlemen, Pod Strickland, aka Clark Jones.
And that's when I knew we was gonna make a lot of money.
Extemporaneous Will Smith impression.
I knew that money was coming in abundance.
In abundance. It was a really, really, really big show tonight with Clark Jones as Will Smith.
Oh, man, that's when I knew. Yeah. We here on the Breakfast Club.
Whoa, that's funny.
He talked like Common Raps.
I remember watching that, and I know, you know, if you grew up watching Martin and how big Martin's personality is,
yes,
right? And so you're looking at, and this happens a lot with A personality types and comedians who are big personalities. It's always weird to see them all get in the room, and it's usually very competitive, not intentionally, but everybody's trying to get their point in or their jokes in. And it was always interesting to watch them during that press run leading up to Bad Boy 3 and how relaxed Martin was.
He didn't do the press run for 2. He just did 3.
He was so comfortable. Something. Just letting Will.
Martin is a mysterious dude.
He is. He went through a lot of stuff, and I think he's at this time just kind of choosing to, let me just do the work, man,
and enjoy it. It's a lot of things that happened post, or really at the start of season 5, which is the worst season of Martin. I'm sorry, Pam was way out there, and Martin was way in. Gina. Between that point and maybe, like, that was like Dark Knight and up until Bad Boys started coming back. I think a lot of things happened. It's his personal business, but fans saw a difference. And he seems chill now. He seems reserved. I don't want to speculate as to what
happened.
Kind of
like the Mike Tyson had his post-Robin Givens moment where everything got weird. And then we've seen him in the last 4 or 5 years. And we're like, oh, this is chill, Mike.
He started smoking weed openly.
He's like, you know, I can do this publicly now. It's fine.
It's fine.
I used to want to punch you in your kidney and throw your kidney. But now I'm fine.
He's fine with thinking before speaking now. It used to be like his brain was moving faster than his mouth or something.
Yeah, it was definitely, his mouth was definitely on some other shit. Like, yo, he would say he talked like a dude that grew up in my neighborhood. Like, that's how dudes would be like, well, fuck you then, I'll piss on your kids. Like,
where did you grow up?
What?
Where did you grow up?
So I am the least military, I moved like a military brat without being a military brat. So I've lived in Newark, New Jersey. I've lived in Harlem. I've lived in Virginia, like the 757 area of Virginia. I've lived in Northern Virginia. I've lived in Savannah, Georgia. Like, I grew up all over the East Coast. So I was one of those kids that I went to, I was just talking to my wife, I went to 8 schools in 13 years of kindergarten through 12. I went to 8 different schools. I went to kindergarten and first in one school, second grade in a different school, third grade, third, fourth, and fifth in the same school. Then 6th in one school, 7th in another school, 8th in a different school. So middle school, I went to 3 grades, 3 different schools, and then 2 different high schools. So my oldest friends.
High schools where? Virginia
and
New York?
High school. Right. And so my oldest friends, in a lot of cases, are comedians that I've met in the last 10 years.
Okay.
Some of you guys are my oldest friends because.
Consistency.
I don't have friends from high school that I talk to that often, right? Like, and then I got locked up a year after I got out of high school. So we lost contact anyway. So I don't have anybody from elementary school. I don't have anybody from middle school. My last 2 years of high school would be the most consistent that I've talked to anybody, and I don't talk to them at all. So, you know, my work friends, we work together, and then when I stopped working, you don't keep in touch with all your work friends.
Mm-hmm.
My friends, for the most part, are comedians. And I'm doing a better job this year, very specifically this year, of reaching out to people. Me and you had some of this conversation. I was like, yo, man, I'm going to try and do better at.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that makes comedy bad for me is not having any interest outside of comedy. One of the reasons that I think New York's comedy is amazing but also limited is sometimes all of the comedians hang out together, live together,
eat together,
work together,
sleep together.
And so all you ever do is talk, do drugs together. So all you talk about
drink
is comedy
Ecto
with comedy
Slime coolers
people.
Together.
Right. Right. So what's your life
go
experience?
Go to Maria
is
Hernandez
different?
Park together. Hey, to walk dogs together.
Walk dogs.
Drink coffee together.
Go ahead and walk them dogs.
And not for nothing.
And not for
eat falafel together.
And not for nothing. Not for nothing.
Right,
but
on the L train.
I think that limits your comedy though. Because
you stop living a life
you
worth talking
having
about.
The same experiences. So what now you're just doing is having minor tweaks on the same premises, right? Whereas if you have, there's a reason Gaffigan is Gaffigan.
It's a reason Gaffigan is Gaffigan.
Gaffigan's married with kids, and his experiences are those experiences. Now, him and Kevin Hart are both married with kids, but they're two different fathers.
Clearly. Different diets.
Different diets. They
different
definitely
SPFs
eat different,
and SPF bottles.
SPFs and barbers. You know what I mean? But, yeah, so, like,
in circles.
You have similar experiences growing up with certain people, right? And I think that there's a way that
Absolutely.
You can relate your comedy to people because of those experiences.
That's the whole
after
point
that
of the podcast.
Though you do everything else, right? Yeah. After that is your individual unique life. So my wife and I have been having this conversation about being each other's best friends. That's not healthy. I married my best friend. That's not fucking healthy, because if I'm pissed off at my wife, I can't talk to my best friend about it, because she now has, she's got a bias.
Okay.
Right? I got to be able to call you and not talk shit about my wife, but just be like, yo, I'm going through this thing and I need to talk to somebody who's not invested in this thing. My wife's invested in my wife, and she should be.
And sometimes you have important things not even related to the argument, but you can't talk to your best friend because y'all are have to square away other shit first.
Right. My wife can't say, hey, I'm very happy in this relationship, but there are things with my ex that I never worked out, and I don't want closure. I don't want to talk to him, but there are things that I never worked out that bother me. She can't say that to me. Separate from the conversation, I could understand that that's a reasonable thing that could happen. But in the moment, you still love him? Like, what's going on?
And motherfuckers.
And she should really have somebody she can have that conversation with without
absolutely.
Me fucking caring or knowing about it.
And it's not, the questions they ask aren't leading.
Right.
Because.
Because right. They're not trying to figure something out.
Even if you arguing with your girl, with your wife, with your man, whoever.
Right.
And you trying to talk about some other shit. They ain't gonna give you their full self because the thing that they're pissed at you about isn't fully worked out. And they have the right to be pissed about it as long as they need to, as long as it needs to be worked out. You gotta have something outside of that.
Right.
I can't take everything to the stage. Comedy ain't your therapy.
Please, don't put that on listen, there's some things that I talked about in a stage play that I wrote that people are like, oh, why are you gonna talk about that on in your set? Never, motherfucker. Like, some of that stuff is just hurt. People are like, oh, but pain, trauma plus time equals comedy. Nah, not all of it. Some of it's just fucking PTSD.
And a lot of them motherfucking comics who be saying that come from rich and they got therapists. They just ain't telling your ass. I hate that. If you rich, make being rich funny.
Yeah.
Live your life.
Do that. Be bougie. Wear a scarf. Wear an ascot on stage.
I'm black. I'm educated as fuck. I went to grad school. I did all that shit. And I took my lumps for it when I started on the south side of Chicago. I took my lumps for it already. I paid my dues like a bitch.
That's how Blips the Life came to be. Also, mentioning that, shout out to Cody Wilkins, who has nothing
Yale?
To do with this conversation, but does.
Well, we started talking about black and educated.
We talk about black and educated. Cody Wilkins went to Yale, played soccer on a soccer scholarship, which
True.
Not really on a soccer scholarship because Yale doesn't technically give athletic scholarships,
True.
But what the fuck ever. But Cody Wilkins is one of those comedians. This is part of the black is not a monolith thing that I love about Cody. Cody actively, consistently continued to do comedy on the South Side when it would have been a very easy path for him to just go and start doing mainstream rooms immediately.
White. we don't do euphemisms. Not urban, not mainstream.
White rooms.
Doing white, because it's some hood ass white rooms
white.
In downstate Illinois.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they ain't mainstream as shit.
I'm not doing that at all.
Yeah, I had to pander like a bitch.
But I did Kokomo, Indiana, and ooh-wee.
Yes. Ooh to the motherfucking wee.
He has... You know, smart material doesn't necessarily mean non-black material or doesn't necessarily mean not Def Jam-like rooms. But he has a very specific sound. He has a very specific point of view.
Right.
And he was like, nah, y'all got a smart fucking cousin. Y'all got a smart brother. Y'all got a brother that went to fuck. You know me. Don't fucking act like you don't know me just because this isn't your experience. You know me. And he kind of just stayed right there and honed. Because you have to make black people laugh. If you can't fucking make black people laugh and you're a black people, shit gets weird, right? So he stayed in his lane. And I respected that so much because he still murders when he goes to white rooms. He does great in white rooms.
Here's the thing,
but he kept fighting. And I shout out to him for that.
This for any comics listening. Yes, shout out to Cody. But for any comics, and I had to learn this lesson. And I really hate giving advice because I only know what worked for me.
Fair.
And I would do different, largely one race type of room. I do a Latino room. I do a black room. I do a white room. And things do change.
Yes.
But I did learn how to do the same set because when I get in the mixed crowd, my fucking head would explode because I'm like, who do I play to? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I see that happen a lot where people don't know. Like, that's why I like that 1 7 minutes in Purgatory because you don't know what the audience looks like and you just have to be funny.
I love that show.
That shit was genius.
I did that shit in a fucking alley with headphones on while cars, people don't know this about Chicago, cars drive through the alleys. So I'm standing in the alley behind Shuba's with the headphones, with the fucking
Ian Abrams
soundproof headphones on, camera right in front of you. You're doing your set to the camera.
Yep.
And I'm standing,
and
there's a fucking car coming from the side. And again, these are soundproof headphones. So it's not just that I'm hearing my own voice. I don't have the regular audio cues that I want to know that this car is fucking coming. So there's a car sitting there watching me do my 7 minute set.
You're living
for most of my set.
Comedian's nightmare. Just you and your material.
No feedback.
Just you and your material.
Do you believe in it? Is it good?
Can you sell it?
How nice is your pen?
Let me see your pen. How nice is it?
You got bars? Or you just got charisma? Because charisma is very hard to pull off.
They can't see your outfit, bro.
They can't see you.
They can't see your outfit.
Son, you know I dressed like
Eddie Murphy.
No. Jesus Christ. I don't have leather money.
Steve Martin. No. You dress like Steve Martin.
I dress like Louis C.K. No masturbate. I dress like Louis.
No Louis.
For a large part of my career for that reason. I wanted to know that my bars worked. I wanted to know that my pen was good enough. And for a lot of my career, it was not. I was relying on, I always had enough personality to pull a little bit off, right? I wasn't safe looking, but I wasn't scary enough looking. And that got me some distance. And then eventually I got to a point where I was like, nah, this is not working for me. It's got to be funnier for me. I don't think that was funny enough. Mm. And you keep working on your bits. But that idea that, and I'm not knocking people who dress up for the stage. That's not what I'm saying.
Well, Steve Martin did say you should be dressed better than your audience, but that's a paid audience.
Yeah, that's
it. Not an open mic audience.
Right.
A free show audience.
Right.
If people, especially black folks, pay $20, they going to dress at least. You should be dressed better than them.
Right.
That's just a little insight.
I don't disagree.
You gotta listen.
Yeah.
I've seen a nigga get his time cut because he wore flip flops at Zany's.
Yeah, he should have got his.
And
time
he don't mention.
He should have got his ass.
Here's the problem.
Too.
He don't mention the flip flops at all.
That should have been the opening.
That should be 20 all
That's
20
the first
minutes
bars.
Of your middle set should be about how you dress like shit.
I brought my pinky toe.
Yeah,
and so I had to wear flip flops here. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, just I'm a lazy fuck.
No.
Please don't talk about the sex you're having.
I did was I dressed as plainly as possible so that my clothes weren't part of the conversation. I wore jeans that fit the right amount of way. I wore zip up hoodies and I wore sneakers that weren't that flashy. That was always but it was really because. I wasn't sure. I didn't know if I was funny.
Yeah.
And I didn't want people to give me credit for being something that I wasn't. I didn't move around a lot. I didn't do act outs. That was it very early because I wanted to know that the shit that I wrote by itself was funny enough.
Things have to be grown into.
And then,
absolutely.
You know, recently, it's really been in the last couple of years that I'm like, okay, these bits, they're good enough. Now I can put some spice on them with a little act out, a little this. But also trying to figure out the way I sound off stage, how to sound like that on stage and still be funny. That's not as easy as people think
process.
Either. Learning how to talk in your real voice on stage and be funny.
Here's another lesson, little tidbit, and I'm just saying. I talked about this on the last episode. I'm OG-ish. I'm not OG yet.
You're there.
But I'm
you're
OG-ish.
Especially on this scene. In the Chicago scene, you're definitely a venerable.
Oh,
you
old.
You see that? Oh, I got bars. I got syllables.
The thing is, when you're starting out, you're like, man, I need to have my voice. They keep saying, I need my voice. Yeah. And you're just so thirsty to get that voice. And you're like, man, I want to find out what my voice is so they know what to cast me and I could be the extra and dress this way. That's fine. But what you have to understand is this is like your, I'll make a Star Wars reference. This is your sword, right? This is your, what's the official word, James?
Lightsaber.
This is your lightsaber. Once you have it, that's your lightsaber.
Yeah.
So that's what you learning to talk like you talk off stage and bringing it on stage.
Yeah.
That's what it, so whatever that is may not be in style once it hits you.
Right.
But you can't go back.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I agree with that.
This is your voice.
That's
so
who you
like
are.
I even now me, I have to push what my voice is in all these different formats to make it hot on my own.
Yeah, we have
because
an advantage, too.
Because anything, we do, listen, whatever you are, white woman, gay man, transgender, whatever your hustle is, make it work for you.
You have an advantage because there was a time, we were talking when we came in about, I haven't done an album yet. I haven't recorded shit. And I'm getting some interest. Over the last couple of years, I've gotten some interest from some companies interested in doing it. I always wanted to do my own, but I know that the distribution side of it is a whole different
conversation.
It's crazy. The promotion and all of these things are different. But what I realized was it wasn't until the last year or so that I even felt like the hour that I had was what I would want to record. Prior to that, I had an hour, but there were holes in the hour. There were parts of the, there were jokes in there that I was like, I don't like this. But this is a good enough joke to be in my set and get through an hour. But that joke is just okay. This joke is the joke, and I want 55 more minutes of this type of joke. How do I get that? And because I wanted an hour of all closers. That's what I've always wanted. I wanted an hour where as soon as I start
talking,
I wanted a thriller. I wanted my opening bit to be a closer. I wanted to be able to say, I used to close with this for 6 months and then I wrote a better bit. And I closed with that one for 6 months and I wrote a better bit. And then I looked up one day and every bit that was on this set was a bit that I used to close with for a considerable amount of time.
Nice.
And they used to get me off stage to a because once that album comes out, then I feel like I'm the kind of comic I want to be. And you're right. It's not the same for everybody. Some guys are like, yo, let me get this hour out so I can start working on my next hour. Cool.
It's a package I'm delivering to whatever studio.
Because sometimes that blocks you, right? You have all of this material that you keep doing and you keep going on the road with the same set.
People keep expecting
that.
Keep expecting you to kill.
So you can't work on
shit. Tiffany Haddish in Miami.
Right. I don't want to go on stage and do this holler up my ass bit because it's awkward. You know what I mean? That's actually how that particular bit, which you guys don't know it, but that particular bit, the reason
you
it doesn't have an
Monk.
Intro is because
go
the first time
Monk.
I did it, I was like, fuck that, I'm doing that bit tonight. And fuck so it. I was like, I don't have no fucking segue into that. This is just the next shit I want to talk about. And that became a really good intro to it if I put it in the right part of my set. All this shit ain't, you're not going to write a set, walk on stage, and go, yep.
You gotta try it. You got to hear. You got to be a good listener to be a good talker.
That's a good point. Say that again?
You got to be a good listener to be a good talker.
And a good actor.
Yeah, but you talk when you act.
Right. But I didn't notice it an actor.
And you're on the new show. Let's bring them back.
Let's bring that back. For Life, ABC, Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. They
get the residuals in.
Get the checks. I got seven episodes.
Yo, where the money at, man?
Run the jewels.
Yo.
Hey, 50, I want my money by Monday, man.
Quick, speaking of this, 50, he talking about money, man. Problems pop off. What I want to ask you, hard left, have you ever been stopped and frisked?
Mm-hmm.
So what's your thoughts on
it? Michael Bloomberg. That's my first thought.
Fuck
Michael Bloomberg. He can eat a dick up till he hiccup in the back of a pickup. Fuck him. Fuck Michael Bloomberg. He's 5'1". The only thing I like 5'1 is my wife. He could eat my... Listen, he could suck my dick from the back. Fuck that dude. Fuck Michael Bloomberg. If you listening, fuck your ass. That shit ain't real. I know you fake New York bitch ass. And I give you these hands anytime I see you, son. You can catch me in D.C. I'll be there February 20th through fucking the 22nd. Run up, get done up in these fucking hands. You come back to Chicago March 5th. Catch me at the Laugh Factory. I give you these fucking balls. I put the balls on you, Mike Bloomberg. Fuck you, son.
All right, so...
I was getting off the four train.
The Bloomberg ad that's going to play after this is going to be real awkward. It's going to be real uncomfortable for somebody.
I'm Michael Bloomberg, and I support
they got a download pay rate, so whatever, fuck them. Whatever. They give me the bag. They click
through. How many people are downloading?
So whatever. So,
just... Nah, but I got stop and frisk. I was on Channel 11 in New York. I used to work for WPIX 11 in New York, PIX 11.
And PIX 11.
It's actually a WGN, a Tribune, or Trunk, or whatever the fuck they are this week. It's one of their companies. It's a bigger national conglomerate of news. So anyway, I'm on PIX 11. I was doing social commentary with jokes added in, and I lived in Harlem. So I would get on the 4 train at Grand Central. I would take that. It's a quick fucking 15-minute ride.
How far up are you? 135th?
129th and okay. Madison. So I'm Eastside El Barrio. So I get on the train. I go back home. When you get off at 125th and Lexington, let's be clear, this is one of the gulliest spots in the history of trains.
Like, I got a crazy story about that, but go ahead.
There's a path mark across the street with security. Like there's security guards in the path mark. They're not like we're trying to stop you from stealing. They're trying to stop you from shooting. Like that little area, 125th and Lexington, is just. Fam, there's bulletproof glass at the fucking IHOP. It's just crazy.
I tried
right
to take
there.
A selfie, right. And a nigga grabbed my arm like, we don't do that, fam, up here.
Nah.
He was, you know, oh, what it was? Because it was police up there, and I That's was right. trying to say, man, fuck the police. And he was like, nah, no cameras.
Nope. Not at all. Because you're going to get
And
faces.
I was
right. Now,
compliant.
Keep in mind, there's a Popeyes like a couple of steps away. There's Dollar Slices a couple steps away. There's Africans doing hair like right there. And then the Metro North is like a block and a half up. This is like the place where it Harlem starts to turn over. That's the turnover. Going a little bit too this far is crazy. Go that way, it starts to get
It's Forever 21. But yes. Shout out to the Popeyes on 125th and St. Nicholas, man. That's one of the best, biggest. That Popeyes, I don't know what they put a bay leaf in the chicken or something.
Yeah. I know what that one is. That's a
they
nice,
do something.
That's a good one.
But
I get off the train there one day. And I get up to the top of the stairs. It's like starting to get dark. It's not dark. It's starting to get dark. And something people should know, New Yorkers and big beards is a more recent thing. That hasn't always been a New York thing. That's always been a Philly thing. That's always been parts of Newark, New Jersey thing. But it's never really been a Harlem thing.
Right.
And so
Harlem
I always.
Was clean.
Right,
right.
Harlem was clean. This is flashy dudes. When you see Paid in Full, everybody's clean, clean haircuts, clean lines.
Red leather, pelly.
So I stood out. Right, I got this big Muslimy beard. You know what I mean? I don't look like I'm trying to be, you know, this particular dude. I look like I look, and there's nobody that looks like me for at least 8 or 9 blocks. So when I get off the train, dude's like, "You against the wall." I know he's not talking to me. I haven't done anything, so I'm still walking, right? And then they run up on
this
me.
This nigga crazy.
They smart fucking not talking to me, right? And also keep in mind,
away from the police.
Keep in mind, there's like 10 dudes in wheelchairs outside of the CVS. It's like mad, you know, heroin addicts still standing around. So I know he's not talking to me. He's definitely talking to one of the dope fiends outside of the fucking place, right? Nah, he's absolutely talking to me. So they push me up against the wall at the Dollar Pizza. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? They're like, yo, where's your ID? I'm like, yo, my ID's in my pocket. Get it. I was like, nah, y'all got to get that. I'm not reaching in my, I'm not moving my hands. Cause I'm at this point, I know what's going on, right?
They,
I know what's going on. I'm
they
not.
They gaslight you
I'm
too.
I'm like, no, sir. He was like, you're not gonna give me your ID. You refuse to give me your ID? Nah, I'm not refusing to give you my ID. I'm refusing to move my hands.
And then you say, "Police pull me over in New York." White, you shaking like you're nervous. I'm like,
yeah,
I am
nervous.
Cause, why are you nervous? Cause have you seen YouTube? And they'll go, why would you be nervous around us? I'm like, you're gaslighting me, bro.
Stop playing in my face.
You
you're
know why
in my face.
I'm scared.
You know why.
Because y'all hopped out of an unmarked Suburban.
Son.
And you training these other two nervous. They shaking.
They nervous. Y'all, I don't, that's scarier. A scary cop is scarier than anything else.
Give me the old been killing niggas since
I'll
the 70s.
I'll slap the shit out of you if you move. No problem. I'm not going to move. I know how not to move.
75, whatever.
Right. So I'm standing there, hands against the wall. And so the dude's finally, he reaches in, he grabs my ID, and he's flipping through it. And I hear him go, "Hey, man." And the guy goes, "Are you on Channel 11? I said, "Yes, sir." Now, by the way, at the time, not only am I on Channel 11, but I wear my hat a particular way. I wear a hoodie every single day.
On Channel 11.
On Channel 11.
PIX 11.
Hat back, and there's a logo on Channel 11 with my face with the features cut out, but you can still see the hat and the beard. So he's looking at my wallet, and he sees my card and my ID, and he goes, "Oh, shit, it's the PIX 11, nigga." And the guy goes, We were looking for somebody you matched the description, but my fault, man. I watch you on Channel 11, man. You super nice, man. I appreciate what you're doing for the community. I'm like, motherfucker. A second ago is like, are you refusing to da-da-da-da? So the problem with broken windows policing is, which is where that came from. It's just like, we're going to stop everybody.
Every black person.
Even if you're
because
not committing crime.
Because this nigga said 95% of crime, guns, and drugs are from black people.
Yeah.
This is the mayor of a major city.
Of a major city.
Not only is that bullshit, it's wrong. It's incorrect. Like a bitch.
It's factually inaccurate.
See, I'm getting
also,
all hyped at the end of the episode.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean,
this ain't good producing on my part.
Basically, fuck Michael Bloomberg.
Fuck him. But you got a new show, man. Tell them about the show, bro.
I still got a new show.
Let's talk about that.
Actually, it was a great segue because the show does talk about the injustices in the justice system.
And the prison industrial complex. Richard Pryor's white man voice.
Which is the only one I know. People like, that's not how white people sound. Like, I'm not doing a white man impression. I'm doing a Richard Pryor doing a white man impression. Eat a dick up.
It sells tickets.
So I play an inmate named Hassan Nawaz, who is Muslim. He works in the works in a drug treatment center, helping other inmates get clean.
So you like patient?
And I'm a good dude. I'm a good inmate who's just minding his business and trying to get out of fucking penitentiary. I'm not helping anybody. I'm not a snitch, but I'm also not involved in any gang related shit in the prison. I'm just trying to do my time and go home. And it turns out that I've been overcharged, and so Aaron Wallace, who's the character that's based on Isaac Wright, takes my case. And so on February 25th, you'll see how that goes. But yeah, this was my first acting gig.
I know you nailed it.
Yesterday, all jokes aside, yesterday, a critic from the New York Times.
Fuck out of here.
Commented, and I'm gonna quote
love.
Because
fuck out of here.
Son,
Fuck out of here.
Fuck out of here.
New York Times.
Son, the New York Times.
My
boy. The New York Times. So the conversation was about casting. And
here's
the New York Times.
They gonna follow you because we gonna do all that.
Do all that. Yeah, y'all do that.
Watch the show.
Check my tweets out. Please watch
Tuesday.
Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. They show it again at 10 p.m. on the West Coast. Please tune in. Nicholas Pinnick is a star. You're gonna love him. And Daryl Bomer is amazing.
What's your popping as? Where can they find you on social?
They can find me on at Felonious Monk. I know this is hard for y'all to spell, and it shouldn't be because it's actually F E L O N like felon, I O U S. Felonious.
It's a play on Felonious Monk.
So it's Felonious underscore, I hate this guy, underscore M-U-N-K. It's Felonious underscore Monk on Facebook.
He's the one with the blue check mark.
On Instagram. I got the blue check mark back in the day, so I've been verified. I'm hood verified. I'm out here. I'm blue checked up. You know what I mean?
Quick question, because we always play a game.
They pay you for that, too. They don't pay you.
RZA or DJ Premier?
Premier.
Just Blaze or Swiss Beats?
Woo! Swizzy, more unique. Just Blaze, I could get from Bink or even Kanye.
Harlem or Brooklyn?
Harlem.
Felonious Monk, please follow us. I'm at the Clark Jones, T-H-E-E Clark Jones.
Before Meg Thee Stallion, son.
The Clark Jones.
AKA Pod Strickland.
At Classic Black Dude. Shout out to James Webb and Staten Madison.
People of Comedy.
People of Comedy for the studio time. I mean, I'm paying him, so I should.
Shout out to them for taking my check.
For shaking me down on the Cash App. I will never sell my soul. You can bet that. I'm so excited. Keep listening. We're getting such good feedback. Thank you to all the classmates listening. Make sure that you like, subscribe, tell somebody. People be like, what can I do? Tell somebody about the podcast, right? If you listen and you enjoyed anything, thank you for telling me. But tell your friends because you learn things on this. This is classic. You learn shit.
Classic.
Y'all are classmates. I love y'all. Take care of yourself this week.
Are you calling classmates?
They're classmates. Sweet. That's nice. And I just got hired as a writer on a TV show. I waited to the end. But I want to tell the classmates first. The deal just went down.
Everybody eating.
Yvette Lee Bowser, creator of Living Single, is the showrunner. And the ink ain't barely dry. So life is good, man. I love y'all. Thank y'all for listening and supporting. And we just going to keep winning. Rest of 2020 here on out.
I can't wait for you to start acting different.
It's already began. Thank y'all so much. Classic Black Dude.